Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Dear Blood River Radio family, you know what? I'm getting ready to shut up. Welcome back. Just in case you're just tuning in, this is our very first program of the new year of 2023. And this is our very first hour program where we go to 3 hours. Now, this story in the second hour, as you well know, and we got my big sister, Sister Nancy, and my little sister, Miss Monica. They're going to come on, and they're going to run the second hour. And so I'm shutting up. And go ahead, Sister Nancy, tell us what we're going to be talking about.
Well, I think what we're going to talk about is Blood River Battle, which is the namesake of your radio program. And that's kind of, if you want me to, I'll give you just a little breakdown. I did some study on the history. I've lived in South Africa, but I certainly don't know that much about the history, but I've done some research. And, I found out that the British actually, they talk about two Boer Anglo wars, but you could actually say that the Blood River Battle of December 16th, 1838, was actually a battle that was fought because the Voortrekkers, the Boers, the Afrikaners, all of the same people, different names, they were trying to find a homeland away from the British, who were trying to take over all of South Africa. I'm going to call that the first battle. The second battle, which is they call the First Anglo-Boer War, oddly enough, they have that starting December the 16th of 1880. I mean, that's a coincidence. And it lasted for a year until March of 1881. Well, that wouldn't be quite a year. Okay, then when gold was discovered in the Transvaal, which it had been discovered, but they were, I guess they had found that there was quite a large volume that could be taken from the Transvaal. Then the British decided that they wanted to take over the Transvaal, which was the area where the Voortrekkers, Afrikaners lived. This created what they call the Second Boer War, which started in October the 9th of 1899 and ended up May 1902. I have some information about that, but I want to go back to Blood River Battle of December the 16th of 1838. Which was an overwhelming victory for the Afrikaners. Theoretically, they're saying about under 500 Afrikaners faced as many as 30,000 black Zulus in the battle that took place because the Afrikaners were trying to find a homeland away from the British in the KwaZulu area, which is today it's KwaZulu. But at any rate, there was a great victory at that Battle of Blood River. In my research, I think one of the shocking things that came out, and I'd like to read this paragraph, which also fits in with our eternal enemy. In 1838, the Afrikaners faced an enemy, the Zulu. Today, the Afrikaner faces still another and more formidable enemy, the Jew. At the meeting of the Talmudic Council of South Africa held in November of 1988, this is very current, 1988, the following two statements were made. We will bastardize the Afrikaner nation into oblivion. Rabbi Rabinovich. This is another statement made by a Jewess. We must do everything in our power to stop the poison of this concept, white nationalism, from spreading. At this, the Afrikaner's only hope of survival. We must, with the greatest urgency, poison the minds of the white populace against this evil. At the time of the Anglo-Boer War, it was a great pity that our influence did not cause the extermination of all their stinking women and children. We were only able to do away with 26,000. Right now, the Cape Dutch liberal Afrikaners are cringing at our mercy. We hold the power. The Boers must be erased for two reasons, both of which mitigate against our cause. Firstly, because of their nationalism, and secondly, because of their religion. Faye Bloomberg Jewess. That is the way they think about the white Afrikaner, and of course, the way they think about us.
It is still going on. You know, Sister Nancy, I talked about me and Rand on the first hour. Rand brought up how our young people have brainwashed, and they've been brainwashed. I'd like to point this out. It doesn't matter what school you go to. You can go into an inner city school that's 90% black, or you can go to a school that's a religious school, a Baptist school, like where my grandson went to, that was 98% white. And they teach the same thing. They teach you to hate yourself if you're white. They may not come out and say it as vehemently as they do as some of these other universities now, but they'll teach you basically if you're white, you're born racist. It's genetic. You can't help it. That you should feel, you should hate yourself. That's what they teach. And see, that's just what this woman said. She said, we're going to have to poison the minds of the white populace against this evil. They've already done it. They've done a wonderful job, Sister Nancy, because you speak to me. I was talking about this as first hour of the show, first part. The people I've known for years will not speak to me, Sister Nancy, because they don't hate myself. But go back to you now.
No, that's okay. But, you know, I was going to point out something. Most people, well, anybody who knows anything about the history of South Africa probably knows that the so-called concentration camps, which were the first ones developed, they were developed by the British to hold the women and children of the Afrikaners in the second Anglo-Boer War, which, like I say, it was from 1899 to 1902. When this Jewish, she quoted 26,000 dead, and that is what people say is the somewhat accurate figure of the women and children that were held and killed in these. Maybe they died of starvation. I don't know if they actually went in and mowed them down, but they did die of being held in these concentration camps in South Africa, 26,000. And she refers to the women and children. But let me tell you something. I had no idea what happened to the Boer prisoners of war, the male Boer prisoners of war. And the only way that I really got an answer is a lady friend of mine who is from Bermuda gave me the most fantastic book 2 days ago, and the title is Boer Prisoners of War in Bermuda. Let me tell you, the British sent out 25,000 men and children, male children, to various posts, including over 4,000 were sent to the Bermuda Islands, and they were held there in prisoner of war camps. But the interesting part, and I don't know I don't know if anybody's done, now this is a study that's been done basically about the Bermuda Boer prisoners of war. But guess what? They sent them all over India. They sent them to Ceylon. They sent them to Helena, St. Helena. So I don't know. Again, this also kind of goes back to what Monica's research was showing on her blog, that German prisoners were held in America, and nobody really knows what happened to them. But now in this case, in Bermuda, they probably had a pretty good, they do have a good reckoning of how these people ended up, how they were treated, and not too badly, actually, in Bermuda. And many of them refused to sign. The only way they could get released is to sign an allegiance to the crown. And some of them stayed on the island of Bermuda for ages. I think one man stayed forever because he refused to ever sign an allegiance to the crown. And this kind of goes back to the vow that they made in 1838. But I'll leave it, you know, that's kind of, to me, that was exciting information. Had no idea what happened to the men. But they were shipped out all over the country to the empire, as prisoners of war for a couple of years.
Well, I'd like to make a few comments here, then we'll go back to you, or go back and then go back to Sister Monica. She's there. But we talked about the poisoning of the minds. You notice the concentration camps we're talking about in the South Africa, bringing those pure white South African Boer trekker, Boers, whatever you want to talk about, the Afrikaner, all the same. The concentration camps were started by Jews. And I know we had a fellow who used to be the Copperhead, was supposed to be one of our co-hosts, but I guess he got kind of cold feet and backed out. He talked about, he did a research on how they had literally had these breeding colonies down here around Bermuda and places like that, where the stinking British rounded up white Irish girls, kidnapped them, forced them, took them to these islands out here, and they were breeding them like cattle to these big black bucks because they wanted... You know, the big black bucks didn't have quite enough brain power to serve like they want to. So they were trying to get a hybrid. They were trying to get a smart buck is what they were trying to do. And as far as the vow, Rand brought this up. The vow, the day of the vow, there's no question whatsoever. That was a miracle. It was a God-ordained miracle that saved those people, that saved the Voortrekkers, the Afrikaners on the banks of the Nkome River in 1838. They fought, Simon Roach said, as high as 35,000 Zulus with 454 whites, and they survived without a single casualty. People are going back to the next segment. We come back in. Hope we get Sister Monica in here because I'm getting hoarse, man. Be right back, folks.
The spirit of the American West is alive and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues of the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like this year's Buckaroo calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
I gave you power, huh? Let me tell you something, boy. If I did give you power, you got nothing. Nobody gives you power. Real power is something you take.
Only liberty we're ever going to have on this earth, that we take it. No one is going to give you power. No one is going to give you liberty, sweetie pies. You're going to have to get up on your hind legs, and you're going to have to get some some guts, and you're going to have to fight, because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it's coming. We just talked about the revolution, the Civil War starting in Canada. We talked about it in the first hour. Maybe Miss Monica, if we don't run out of time, maybe she can have time to comment on that, because she's a Canadian. But anyway, we'll go right back to Sister Nancy. Go ahead and take over. I don't know, but I think our Sister Monica, whoever one wants to jump in, go ahead. I'm shutting up now.
You know, I might follow up on what you said there about this possible war, and then I'm going to let Monica take over. But Jan Lambreth sent something out on an audio video called Law of the Jungle, and this kind of it applies to what you're suggesting that people should do. The first law is anything goes. Be flexible. Christians have disadvantages due to their standards. Use new methods, new tactics, adapt or lose. And it's a different, you have to use different tactics when you're dealing with savage blacks, and because playing dirty is a necessity. And always remember that blacks and reds, communists, use lies and violence. And he quoted Hitler, who said, "Nature does not forgive weakness." And then he, Jan was quoting something. He was talking about what they call the second law. He said that when people commit heinous crimes in war, that even though people do not want to respond in the same method, they need to consider responding in some way when the enemy uses unethical methods such as torture. But anyway, that's about it, and that's just, you know, to follow up on your idea of what people need to be thinking about.
Right, and I agree with that. I believe we're going to bring Sister Monica in now. How are you doing tonight, Miss Monica?
Doing very well, thanks, and congratulations that you've gone to the 3-hour format. That's great, Eddie.
Well, I tell you what, yeah. I could not. There's no way in the world we could do this. No one man can do it. You have to have a team, and I'll tell you what, we're all a marvelous team. I don't consider us having any big chief here. I'm thanking God for the crew we've got here. I'm sure y'all consider me the same way as family. And with that said, God bless you, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say, Sister Monica, so go ahead.
Well, I just want to follow up on some of the things that Nancy was bringing in the first quarter of this hour. And so first off, the website that she referred to, where there is this article, it's on the Truth and Justice for Germans .com website. And Larry Romanoff, he wrote an article, which I republished there. And it is about the German prisoners of war that were brought to America after World War II. And like she said, nobody really knows what happened to them afterwards. There was all kinds of media propaganda which talked about how well they were treated, that they would have so much food and beer that they had to throw it away, and all this nonsense, which was, of course, utter and complete lies. And then, I mean, one of the things, the purposes of the article and spreading it far and wide, and Larry Romanoff has been studying this particular issue for 10 years, and he still has not been able to come up with a satisfactory answer of what happened to these prisoners of war afterwards. I mean, it could be as bad as that they were all killed. Now, I don't know how many exactly there were. I think I need to reread the article to see if there are some numbers there. But if people have information, they can contact Larry, and I think the information would be there to how, that's what he's seeking more information, and he feels that the more this article is seen and read, there, you never know, there might be some people with some information about that. Okay, and then I just wanted to also talk about this, how they teach stuff in school, this, now they call it critical race theory. I didn't know what that was probably even a year ago, even though I knew it was happening, but I had to look it up and find out what that exactly is, critical race theory. It's basically where, you know, a little grade one child goes to school, practically first day, goes home and cries to their mother. This would be a white child, I say, and says, am I bad because I'm white? I mean, this is how it is. This is how bad it's become. Everything about white people is bad. My friend showed me her son's social studies curriculum, and this is a few years back already, and it was a high school social studies. And I said to her after I read through the outline of the whole year curriculum, I said, gee, if every single white child doesn't commit suicide by the end of the year, I'll be very surprised. That's how bad it was in terms of what they were teaching. Everything was focused on evil, evil whites, but largely based on lies, distortions, omissions. There was not a word about great achievements that the white people have done, and not a word about, you know, all the good things that white people do, not just achievements in terms of, you know, music, culture, the arts, but also who is it that goes around the world helping other people? Who is it that goes to Africa and builds schools or sanitation systems or digs wells? Who does that? I'll just leave it at that for now and toss it back to either Eddie or Nancy, and then we can talk about the comparison to the Boers of the Germans. So I'll just pause for a moment.
I would say this, Monica. When I went to your site and I looked up this research that the man has done about German prisoners of war in America, I was flabbergasted by all of the locations all across the country, from north to south to east to west, where all of these people were being housed. I had no idea. I mean, I knew that some prisoners, German prisoners of war, were shipped to this country, but I mean, they had them all over the country. And as you and I were talking, the Germans are so organized and so methodical. They knew who were the people who were in their camps. They had it organized. But I'll bet the Americans probably didn't keep a good record of the prisoners. And, you know, they will cover that up and say that that's top secret today. I bet they will. I bet they won't release that information. And there again, the poor Germans, were they just thrown out on their own? Did they even have an opportunity to be offered a way to get back to Germany? Terrible situation.
Yep, these are unanswered questions. And that map, like you indicate, there were many camps. The map is covered with dots, each dot representing a location where there were German POWs held, imprisoned. Mm-hmm. It's just covered. Like you say, it's everywhere in the States.
It is.
So nobody taught us that in school.
Of course not. In fact, I bet you it's still top secret. I'll bet you they'll say, well, we can't divulge that information. They don't want us to know really what did happen. And, you know, with the bookkeeping, the insufficient bookkeeping, I wonder if they even have a good record keeping of all of these men. Mm-hmm. Terrible. Like I say, it's a terrible situation.
Yes. When you were talking about the Boers and how persecuted they were, and then the things that these Jews said in as recently as 1988, I mean, I just couldn't help but think of Germans and Germany, and it's a very parallel story, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How they are to be disappeared off the face of this earth, and then the Kudenhove-Kalergi plan came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's the fellow who wrote... I don't know if it's a book or a treatise or whatever, and about how the race of the future will be a Negroid, Mongoloid race. So miscegenation is what has to be done, basically a dumbing down. And also when you mix everybody up together, you don't really have a strong a sense of identity from anybody. And
right.
The cultures all get mixed up, so you don't really have a culture other than the one that is promoted by, well, in this case, it would be by the mainstream media, by Hollywood, and those are all controlled and owned by this same eternal poisoners of the wells.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that would be the Jews.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Yeah. So,
folks,
I guess
you're so
yeah,
right
music,
about that.
Go ahead.
You're so right about that. Dear sisters, we've got to go to this break, as y'all well know. We'll be right back. I'm going to read y'all something I talked about a long time ago. Just briefly, then I'll go right back to y'all.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. President Biden getting ready to visit the southern border. White House correspondent Ali Raffa explains what's at stake.
This trip will have the potential to possibly plant the seeds for change, especially as he enters these last 2 years of his first term in office.
Biden's visit to El Paso comes just after the city declared a state of emergency amid an ongoing migrant surge. The Supreme Court ruled to extend Title 42. The public health policy has been used during the COVID-19 pandemic to expedite deportations. The House of Representatives finally has a new speaker.
And that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which you're about to enter. So help you God.
Yes, I do.
Congratulations and Godspeed.
California Republican Kevin McCarthy was elected Speaker of the House on a historic 15th ballot after making concessions to a small group of conservative holdouts. The final vote was 216 for McCarthy, 212 for Democratic House Leader Hakeem Jeffries. New documents reveal that the man accused of killing four University of Idaho students had applied for an internship at a local police department. Brian Koberger had submitted his application to the department in Pullman, Washington during the fall semester when he took his first classes at Washington State University, where he was pursuing a degree in criminology. Pullman is just a few miles away from the crime scene in Moscow, Idaho. Thank goodness Queen Elizabeth isn't alive to see this.
The British royal family has gone silent after excerpts from Prince Harry's book have leaked. The memoir, written by the estranged prince, alleges that Prince William got into a physical altercation with Harry about his relationship with actress Meghan Markle. His father, King Charles, begged his sons to not make my final years a misery.
That's Corey Myers. This is USA News.
Today, those interested in maintaining healthy blood sugar glucose levels still have limited choices when it comes to good-tasting, thirst-quenching beverages. One brand expanding consumer choice for blood sugar-friendly beverages is GlucoDown, manufactured by publicly traded Glucose Health Incorporated, trading under the symbol GLUC, a leader in America's true growth industry, diabetes-friendly functional beverages. GlucoDown's prebiotic fiber blocks the body's absorption of dietary sugars, moderates after-meal increases in glucose levels, and helps maintain regular digestive health. Every nutritious and delicious serving has no sugar, no caffeine, and is a great source of prebiotic soluble fiber. All 8 flavors are dietitian recommended to maintain blood sugar in a healthy range. Available at CVS, Publix, online at Walmart.com, and a top category choice on Amazon. For more information on the company, visit GLUCReport.com. To begin maintaining your blood sugar in a healthy range, visit Amazon and search GlucoDown, GLUCO, down.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach.
Okay, they missed the boat. We'll get them on. Maybe we can get them on the third hour.
I also don't have to stay on.
Dear Blood River Radio family, please thank you for hanging on. We have just a little bit of a delay there, but people, hang on. Listen, we're going to go back to the brothers, to our dear sisters, Sister Monica, Sister Nancy, but I'm going to read this right here. We've always said, it's to repeat, Dave Gaharry, like I have 1,000 times, it's always the Jew, all the time. All the time, it's always Jews. All right, we always talk about how evil Mao Zedong was, his regime in China. I got this book sent to me from Tex Mars years ago. It's called Conspiracy of the Six-Pointed Star. It's real thick. But over on page 201, like you wouldn't know where the book is, but it's on page 201. He talks about This article talks about the Jewish origins of Mao's communist regime in China. This won't take but a minute. Another revelation that USA and Western journalists and historians are prohibited from writing about concerns the Jewish origins of Mao Zedong's Red Chinese Revolution. He says, in fact, Mao was a stupid and inept communist peasant who was schooled by Skull and Bones and initiated into the International Masonic Lodge by socialist Jews of the United States. This was done with the permission of President Franklin D. Roosevelt, himself a 32nd degree Mason, and later President Harry S. Truman, a 33rd degree Mason. If we go further, Mao all along had been a closely controlled puppet of Jewish revolutionaries like, get this people, Israel Epstein and Sidney Shapiro. Sidney Shapiro, an American Jew, was in charge of Communist Red China's propaganda organ. That's the media. That's the media branch. So you have Jews controlling the media here in the United States, in Canada, in Germany, France, the UK, on and on and on. Had an American Jew in China. What do you know? Also, guess what else? Guess who was the head of finance in Mao Zedong's revolution? His name was Israel Epstein. He was the finance minister. He's shown in this photograph right here being honored for his service by the current Chinese communist leader, Chairman Hu Jintao. So, going on further down, talks about Jewish spies give United States military secrets to communist China, as well as Slick Willie Clinton did back when he was the president. So, people, the point is, you got the Jews that totally ran and set up communism in Red China, because communism is Judaism, is Satanism. It's all the same thing. In the Soviet Union, in Red China, in the Ukraine, in Israel, now in the United States, in Canada, it's communist, 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 Bushism, 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 Satanism, 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 raw Judaism. The Jews control the whole damn world. Back to you, Sister Monica, what do you think about that?
Yes, I'm so glad that you brought this up about China and Mao Zedong. Because, you know, for years, as I was learning about Jewish involvement in various bad deeds, I always still wondered, what about China? What about China? Mao Zedong, what about him? And since, you know, in more recent times, I have found out also that he was surrounded by Jews. He was advised by Jews. And you laid it out very nicely there with the reading that you just did. I think it's really important. I think if I was wondering about it, many, many, many other people are wondering about it. And it might be very new to most listeners. I don't know. But that's really important to point that out. It is Jewish people themselves who say Judaism is communism and communism is Judaism. These are one and the same. There are quotes by various rabbis, and I don't have the names of them in front of me, but I have seen that quite often. That is a fact. This is their operating program, is communism. And, you know, what we learned in school about communism was quite different from what the reality is about communism. I remember after the unit in social studies class, and I think it might have been around grade 6 or 7, I'm not sure, you know, pretty young, maybe 12, 13 years of age, when we were learning about communism, I thought at the end of the unit, I thought, oh, well, it doesn't sound so bad. They kind of made it sound, you know, all right, actually kind of good. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that was the intent of the teacher or if the teacher really knew nothing about it himself and just was going by, you know, the prescribed curriculum notes. I really don't know now. So there you go. That's very important information. I'll pass it back to you.
You know, I didn't realize that there were such a thing as a Jewish Chinese, but there actually are. There are actually Jewish Chinese as well. But, you know, I was going to take you on another trip down the rabbit hole. I was going to say, Monica, do you want to talk about Alfred or about your book? I know that those are important things and we need to let our listeners know about.
Okay, Nancy, thank you. Well, I'm going to start with Alfred. So 5 years to the day after the day that I was arrested, January 3rd, 2018, so that makes it January 3rd, 2023, just a few days ago, Alfred was facing the Inquisition yet again. Now, what do you think he might have been facing the Inquisition for now? It was for a gesture that he did in the courtyard of the prison while he was in prison. He was showing a fellow prisoner how high his dog can jump, or how high he can shovel a snowbank from his driveway, or how high the grass grows in the meadow, or whatever. It's a straight arm gesture, which was referred to as the Roman salute. It represented.
Oh, okay.
It represented we come in unity and peace, and this is then it's been rebranded and turned into something really evil and scary by the usual suspects, or you know, and it was called the Hitler salute. So when Alfred was in the courtyard showing this fellow prisoner how high his dog can jump, and the guard screeched at Alfred, "Hey, that's a Hitler salute." And the fellow prisoner immediately said, no, Alfred's just showing me how high his good dog Pavlov can jump." So anyway, believe it or not, Alfred was given 6 months of another jail term, but don't worry, he's not in jail. That was the lowest level court, and now the appeal process starts, and this could be a long drawn out process, and Alfred is very confident that everything's going to blow up before that ever comes to pass. And even if it does happen that he goes to jail, we're all in jail, but just different kinds of jail. And we basically, you know, when you're a warrior on the front lines, you kind of have to take these things in stride. I know. So anyway, that's the story about Alfred. What's just the recent news?
I can't believe they're still hounding him. I really can't. We have a caller. We can bring him on for a couple mm-hmm. minutes. He's one of the fellows calling in from the League of the South. We really needed them on the first hour. We don't have room much for him now because we have especially the third hour, too. Gene's been laying out that program. But if we can't get them on this week, there's be plenty of time. I'd like to talk to them if we can't. But from next week would be great because we have to record two shows. And if they can't come on the 14th, get them on the 21st. But if you will, Jay, go ahead and put Mark on for a minute. Mark is calling in from the from down in Florida, parts unknown. He's one of our League of the South brothers. So you can bring old Mark on if you want to, Jay.
Hey, Eddie, can you hear me?
Hey, Mark, what you doing, fella?
Well, we're just coming back from having a very good conference down here in Florida with the Florida State chapter having their state conference this afternoon. And had a really good slate of speakers. I had a lot of good informative and inspiring things to say, and a lot of great camaraderie. We had a really good time.
Well, you know what? It just dawned on me when I heard your voice. I was thinking Mark, which Mark? But as soon as I heard your voice, I knew who you was. Hey, we've gone to 3 hours now. We'll have to start getting you on periodically if you'd like to come on. But anyway, what
sure,
were the
high?
We got probably about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before we go to the break. I know you're real eloquent. In a nutshell, sum it up. What are some of the high points that you've witnessed down there at the conference?
Well, the high points were that we had a couple of guest speakers who are really not affiliated with the League of the South, but who are quite like-minded. And it certainly gave us a lot of hope and encouragement that there are a lot more people out there waking up to the idea that the U.S. empire is in its death throes, and that we need to get out of it before it takes us down with it. So that was one of my biggest takeaways from today. Our message is finally starting to resonate with a lot more people.
Well, I hope y'all didn't mention the Jew word down there. Hope y'all were.
Just a couple of times in passing, but we didn't dwell on it.
we never mentioned the Jew. The Jew word because we're real polite here. But anyway. Hey, Red wants to know. He's asked me something about the videos that are going to come.
Yeah, all of the speeches were videotaped, and as soon as they get edited, the Florida League will have them up on their website, and I think they'll probably put them on YouTube and some other social media platforms as well. So anybody who's interested can be watching for those as they begin to hit the internet.
Well, I'd love to hear some of the speeches. I certainly would. I'd love to hear Dr. Hill and Michael Tubbs. And you know what, Mark is the first fellow we had on. We were down there at the League of the South in Pine Level. Was it last year? I can't keep track anymore. Mark's very eloquent.
I think it's been 2 years ago now, Eddie.
I can't believe how long ago it's been. Mark's an engineer, graduated University of Arkansas. He's an old Razorback, very intelligent, very hardcore Christian. Hey, Mark, you know, if you get in touch with some of the other league guys, I'd like to have some of the league guys on that no one's ever heard of, what I call the buck privates, the corporal, the buck sergeants, people that haven't ever spoken on the radio. I'd like to get you to come on, bring some of those other guys, give them out our number, tell them how they can call in. I'd like to start getting League of the South guys on a regular basis because we have 3 hours now. If you don't mind, not trying to put you to work.
Sure, I'll start spreading the word. I can think of two or three people right off the top of my head that would be excellent candidates for that.
I tell you what, it's a push to League. I'm a League of the South guy. Rand's League of the South. You know, the League of the South, I've been over and repeating myself like from several shows and even last week, but the League of the South, out of all the cornucopia of organizations, the so-called right-wing people that went up there to Charlottesville, for instance, Mark, I think we're the only ones left standing. I think the rest of us.
You're absolutely right, Eddie. We're the last man standing. All of the rest of the people who participated in that Unite the Right rally several years ago up there have all fallen into the dustbin of history, as they say.
Yes, they have. And you know what? And it's just one thing. It's a lack of guts, a lack of courage. These people make me sick, Mark, that fold up like that. I mean, it's the first little bit of gunshot. Hey, I'd like to get Miss Monica. We have Miss Monica. We have a world-famous lady on. She's one of our co-hosts. Her name is Monica Schaefer. She did time in prison, in a German prison, for thought crimes, for questioning the Holocaust. Her brother did time there, too. Her name is Monica Schaefer. Monica, would you like to ask Mark any questions about the purpose of the League of the South? Any solutions that the Mark has? Mark is a really smart guy. He's full of solutions. Monica, would you like to say something to Mark?
Oh, thanks. Well, first of all, the more I've learned about what has happened in to the southern states, the more I realize it's a very similar story as what happened to the Germans. And I've just grown to have such an affinity with the folks from the South. And it's interesting because in school, we got this impression about the South being really kind of primitive, you know, and we weren't taught anything that would have made us feel sort of respect or whatever. I can't even describe exactly what it was, but we just had this notion about, oh, this, you know, South, it's kind of, you know, simple and just a bunch of hicks and primitive. That's just from the schooling and from the impression we got from Hollywood too and all that. So I'm just delighted to get to know some of the good folks from the South. And like Eddie says, I mean, I'll just ask you more about this organization. You know, what kinds of things you're doing for solutions going forward. I guess that's what Eddie always likes to hear.
Right. Well, you know, your experience, Monica, is not unlike that of a lot of other people. You know, there's an old saying that the victors get to write the history books.
Correct.
And in the case of the War for Southern Independence back in the 1860s, that certainly holds true. And so for 150 plus years now, the victors have done everything they can to paint the South and the Southern people in the most negative light that they possibly can in order to justify their crimes against us. And so, you know, the fact that we're not all a bunch of knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing Neanderthals down here is one of those things that they don't like to get out any more often than it does, because if you really go back and look at American history from the foundation of the original American Republic, you know, from the winning of the Revolutionary War to the most influential people who founded the original American Republic, the vast majority of them were from the South. You know, most of the most famous founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, James Madison, these were all Southerners. The first few presidents we had were all Southerners. And, you know, historically, the South has always done the South has always done all of the empires fighting for it. During the war, you know, one of the things I like to point out to people, you know, for a bunch of ignorant redneck hicks, we came up with some of the most innovative military inventions during the course of the war. Electronically exploded mines, that was a Confederate invention. The first submarine to ever sink an enemy warship was a Southern submarine. So there's a people like to throw the phrase around Yankee ingenuity, but a good friend of mine who was involved with the league for many, many years said, Yankee ingenuity, my foot. He said, people need to start talking about Southern ingenuity. We've been doing more with less longer than most anybody else on the face of the earth.
Got that
right. Yeah. Boy, that sounds so much like how the Germans have been, you know, demonized and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, there are a lot of parallels, and I've said that myself before, too. You know, the result of Germany's loss of the Second World War was that they were browbeaten and emasculated, basically, by the rest of the world for their supposed crimes. And this is the same thing happened to us. And so
here's some, sorry to interrupt. Here's something that just occurred to me. In the re-education that we've all been facing, as and that's in quotation marks, you know, a la George Orwell style, the Germans have been made to become self-hating. Now, has that also happened in the South? That's
Yes, absolutely. And it started back in the mid-90s when the NAACP, National Association of Advancement of Colored People, first declared war on the Confederate battle flag and wanting to try to get it taken down from public view anywhere that it was up. And it, ever since then, it has just escalated little by little, year after year, until what we've seen over the last two or three years with all of the Antifa and Black Lives Matter stuff, where they've been defacing monuments, pulling monuments down, you know, right, and things like that. And so, and of course, the propaganda that our people are constantly beaten over the head with through the government, through the media, that we should be ashamed of who we are and what our ancestors did, and we're no good, and that kind of thing. And but it's so, the league's answer to that is that, well, you know, if we're so bad, then why don't you just agree that we need our independence, and then you won't have us racist rednecks dragging your wonderful Yankee Union down anymore. You know?
That's right.
But unfortunately, as it was back then, we're still very much their economic milk cow. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, Southern boys make up the 65% of the U.S. military, so they love to have us go do their fighting for them.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, just used and abused. And but I guess, I mean, I have, you know, I've learned lots, and it's happening here in Canada too, about all the monuments being taken down and also names being changed and whatnot, basically erasing history. I guess in the general population, do you see that an awakening now among the Southerners that to take pride in their history and to turn this around? I mean, I know a lot of people have woken up about some of the lies just with this latest, you know, the COVID this genocidal jab that they're trying to push on everybody in the lockdowns. That has really rattled a lot of people awake. But what about their awareness of, you know, their own heritage? And do you see that turning around now that people are starting to
I'm starting to see some glimmers of hope in that regard. You know, the more that our enemies ratchet up their attacks on everything that we are or have ever been, the more it begins to make people question some of this stuff. Now, you know, here again, we've been suffering under a century and a half of Reconstruction and browbeating from within and from without. And so too many of our people have adopted the attitude of that, well, you know, I'm proud to be a Southerner, but I really want to be a good American too. You know, I want to, I want to love my country, and I want to, you know, I want to elect Donald Trump to be president again, so that he can make America great again, and blah blah blah. And so it's a combination of the battered wife syndrome and Stockholm syndrome all rolled into one.
Yes, sir. Stockholm. People.
That's a really good description.
Yes. Stockholm.
Yeah. So too many of our people, even though every night when Uncle Sam comes home, he beats the snot out of us. we still too many of our people still have this desire to make him happy, you know, and so so it's a vicious cycle. And so the purpose of the league is to try to reawaken a sense of pride in our people and the idea that, you know, the U.S. empire needs us way more than we need them. I did, for example, just on energy, I did a little research on this the other day. 58% of all the crude oil that's pumped out of North America, 52% of all the natural gas, and 28% of all the coal comes from the South. If we were free of the U.S. government and were our own self-governing republic, we would be a giant on the world energy stage. Because we could even ramp up production higher than that, because these numbers are based on the limitations that are placed on production by the U.S. government, because they want to buy oil from Saudi Arabia and other places like that. So who knows how much oil we could actually produce, how much gas we could produce, and how much coal we could mine if we didn't have the U.S. Department of the Interior and the federal government telling us, no, 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 you can't do that.
Oh my goodness!
We could be wealthy beyond most people's wildest imaginations.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, not only as a country, but as individuals. You know, the economic prosperity that something like that would bring. Think of the jobs that could be created for the average hardworking Southerner who's seen his livelihood exported to Mexico, Indonesia, Guatemala, and China over the last 25 or 30 years. You know, all of those jobs could come back to Dixie, and our people could be prosperous again. All they have to do is disabuse themselves of this silly, fatalistic allegiance to that striped Yankee rag that flies on all the flagpoles around here.
That's right.
Amen.
You know, it isn't it amazing how the Confederate flag has been so demonized, just like the swastika, mm-hmm. which is actually a representation of you know, also prosperity, and it's been around for forever, and then it was demonized like crazy. And at the truckers convoy in Canada, they had Agent Provocateur show up with flags. One was the Confederate flag and the other was the swastika, and of course these were provocateurs, right?
To mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because I'll share a quick anecdote with you that I heard several years ago. A friend of mine who's a television movie director, producer kind of guy, was shooting a Pepsi commercial in Prague, the Czech Republic. And he's from South Carolina. And one of the Czech ladies who was there found, I hear the music.
Hey, Mark, listen, please. Put out the information, round up some of the league guys, and I'd like to get them. I'd love
or
to get
stay
them to
on.
On
I want to hear the story.
Yes. Dr. Hill is trying to call in right now, too. But, well, yeah, okay. Mark, yeah, hang on. Finish your story.
Yeah, if you'll let me finish that, then I'll relinquish the floor to Dr. Hill.
Sure, of course, of course. People, hold on to your seats. We're going to let Mark, he's one of the head honchos of the League of the South, let him finish his story. Then we're bringing the general, the big head honcho, Dr. Hill. He's going to come on. They're reporting live from down Florida, League of the South meeting. Be right back, folks.